This is Jim Inkster. Coming today, we'll recap LSU's stirring 34-10 rout of Texas A&M and the reigning Heisman Trophy winner, Johnny Manziel, who was shut down at Tiger Stadium Saturday. As LSU improves to 8-3, the Tigers host Arkansas Friday. LSU is a 25-point favorite over the Razorbacks, who are winless in the SEC this year. Also, State Treasurer John Kennedy on the state budget and more. He's been going after these NGOs, non-governmental organizations, and the advocate last week accused the treasurer of grandstanding. We'll talk with him about the criticism he's getting and whether he plans on continuing his quest. And, of course, there's much more regarding the money that is in the coffers for state government. Now the news. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number outside the area. It is 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. J.C. Kane is producing, and in just a bit, we are slated to hear from the state treasurer, John Neely Kennedy. Wrapping up LSU's win over Texas A&M Saturday, the Tigers thumped the Aggies and stopped Johnny Manziel, who made his debut and farewell at Tiger Stadium simultaneously. And LSU is the only school in the SEC. Sorry to see number two sign an NFL contract, which should be coming soon. Manziel, in two appearances now against LSU, has completed just 46% of his passes for five interceptions and one touchdown, and he's been held to 72 rushing yards. Now, LSU has been gangbusters against Johnny Football, and the rest of the conference and the rest of the nation, for that matter, has had all kinds of difficulty stopping the Texas A&M quarterback. Alabama, for example, arguably the best team in the country. They're the defending national champions, and the only team they've lost to in the last 2 years is Texas A&M. Against Alabama, Manziel has completed 74% of his passes in two games, five touchdowns, one interception, and 190 rushing yards. Against Auburn, 79% of his passes completed in two appearances against the War Eagles, six touchdowns, two interceptions, 138 rushing yards. And go on against Ole Miss, 74% completion, three interceptions against the Rebels and only one touchdown, but 537 yards and 253 rushing yards against Ole Miss for Johnny Football in two games. Against Mississippi State, 80% completion, 757 yards passing, five touchdowns, three interceptions, and 176 rushing yards. Against Arkansas, Johnny Football, 76% of his passes completed and 714 yards passing, five touchdowns, no interceptions, and 160 rushing yards. So he's been unstoppable, an unstoppable force against the rest of the SEC West, but LSU has stopped Johnny Football. And why have the Tigers had so much trouble against other quarterbacks like Aaron Murray and Bo Wallace and A.J. McCarron? It makes us wonder. And LSU is now 8-3 overall, ranked 17th in the BCS standings. The Tigers will close the regular season at home Friday against Arkansas, the last time these two teams will play on the Thanksgiving weekend. LSU and A&M will do it next year, and quite likely A&M will not have Johnny Manziel in its lineup in 2014. But LSU and Arkansas at Tiger Stadium Friday, 1:30. LSU is a 25-point favorite over the Razorbacks, who have lost all seven of their conference games this year. A Reveille poll today had 34% of those responding saying Arkansas would win this game. I don't know what the LSU fans or those responding to the Reveille poll are taking, but it would seem that LSU should be on easy street come Friday against the University of Arkansas. There were a number of empty seats Saturday, despite the fact that the most exciting player in college football was in the house. And it also makes you wonder how many empty seats there will be this Friday, and how many empty seats will there be in Tiger Stadium next year when LSU plays the likes of Sam Houston State, New Mexico State, which has only won one game this year, UL Monroe, Kentucky, another winless SEC foe. There may be a number of empty seats come 2014, and Joe Oliva and the LSU brass may have to decide whether the fans will keep coming for inferior opposition. And LSU will play an inferior opponent, no doubt, this Friday against the University of Arkansas, and there may quite likely be 20 or 30,000 empty seats in Death Valley come Friday when LSU faces Arkansas. One note amid all the glee about stopping Johnny Manziel, and this one my friend Richard Condon, the sportscaster, has pointed out that LSU, in the last 224 home games that spans 32 seasons, going back to October 17th, 1981, when the Tigers beat Kentucky 24-10 in Jerry Stovall's second year, LSU has not had a kickoff return for a touchdown at Tiger Stadium in 32 years. Eric Martin was the last guy to do it against Kentucky in 1981, and that's about 1,000 attempts at running a kickoff back for a touchdown, and it hasn't happened in 32 years. Eric Martin recently turned 52 years old. Hokie Gajon, by the way, his New Orleans Saints teammate, did it when he was in college, but 224 games without a touchdown by an LSU player on a kickoff return at Tiger Stadium. And that spans eight coaches: Jerry Stovall, Bill Arnsparger, Mike Archer, Curly Hallman, Jerry DiNardo, Hal Hunter for one game, Nick Saban, and Les Miles. Five U.S. presidents, seven Louisiana gubernatorial administrations, and no kickoff return for a touchdown at Tiger Stadium. It takes some guy, maybe 50 years old, in good shape, give him 1,000 attempts to return a kickoff back, and, you know, he might make it once, but no LSU player. And they've had some great return people, including some this year, such as Odell Beckham Jr., and no touchdowns on kickoff returns at Tiger Stadium in 224 games. There were some people in Tiger Stadium who were not usually there last Saturday. Derek Jeter, the Baseball Hall of Famer-to-be for the New York Yankees, ranks 10th in Major League history with 3,316 hits. He arrived in a limo just in time for kickoff. Very few people recognized Derek Jeter when he entered the gates. And also arriving shortly thereafter was his Yankee teammate, the pitcher C.C. Sabathia, who's an enormous fellow. More people did notice him, but there was a mob reaction when several Duck Dynasty stars were spotted in the suites on the east side of Tiger Stadium, which kind of shows you where the mindset of the LSU fandom is. There's more knowledge of Duck Dynasty than there is of the New York Yankees, who didn't have a very good season this year, by the way. But Derek Jeter is baseball royalty and soon to be a Hall of Famer, Derek Sanderson Jeter. As I noted, it was a crowd that was not complete Saturday. It was a cold day, but crowds in other parts of the country are at capacity despite cold weather. But at LSU Saturday, there were a number of empty seats at the kickoff, and then as LSU took control by the end of the game, most of the stadium was empty. One of those in attendance was our producer today, J.C. Kane. And she was in the stands. Was it a comfortable venue, JC, despite the cool weather?
It was very cold, rainy, but I enjoyed it. I think that may have been a lot of the decline in the attendance. But I can say there was a lot of cold and wet people in the stands, but high energy, to say the least.
Well, I would think that considering Johnny Football was there, that the crowd should have been at capacity, and especially with LSU playing so well against Johnny Manziel. But now that with the games on television, every game on television, fans quite often choose the comfort of their living room or some watering hole where they can actually buy a beer, unless they're in Tiger Stadium suites where they can drink anything they want. They choose to watch the game in another venue, even though they have tickets, which is an amazing phenomenon, because when I was in school and as a student, we used to have to stand in line for hours to get in the stadium, to hope to get in with your student ID. And in the teams in the late 70s, early 80s, when I was in school, were not as good as they are now, but the stands were full. And the crowds were more raucous. I can imagine Derek Jeter and C.C. Sabathia, they were there and probably had heard the lore about Tiger Stadium and how loud it is. It wasn't that loud Saturday, and they're probably thinking, this is what people are talking about, because Tiger Stadium in Detroit is louder than Tiger Stadium in Baton Rouge was Saturday, as LSU faced the best quarterback in the country, the defending Heisman Trophy winner, Johnny Manziel, and played perhaps their best game of the season against Texas A&M, really winning with ease against Texas A&M by a score of 34-10. So it was an impressive effort for LSU. The Tigers have a chance to finish 10-3. They should beat Arkansas Friday and then go to a bowl game. And Les Miles was 10-3 last year, and LSU is apparently en route to another fine season. And the fans, even at 10-3, as we know, are not all that enthused about being third in the SEC West. But on the whole, it's not a bad year. And in the old days, coaches would be heralded for this kind of output. But at $4.3 million a season, much is expected from Leslie Edwin Miles. 297-5633 as we join State Treasurer John Kennedy. Good morning, John Neely Kennedy.
Good morning, Jim. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, and happy birthday, belatedly.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, no, that was last week.
Yeah. It was on the Day of Bond Commission.
Well, that's quite a way to celebrate, isn't it?
Yes, it is. What are you doing for Thanksgiving?
I'll be here. I'll be on the air. You want to come back in a few days?
Well,
I imagine you'll be with your family.
I'm going to be with my family, and I'm going to be my 17-year-old, and I are going duck hunting, so that'll be fun. If it's not too cold. Looks like it's going to be cold.
So you actually hunt?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah. I do mostly duck and dove. my son, I enjoy it, but my son, he's 17, and when you find something that a 17-year-old likes to do that won't get him in trouble, and during which he'll talk to you, you do it, no matter what it is. So we go to the duck blind together and have a good time.
You should be safe. Now, if Dick Cheney were with you, it might be a different story.
Well, Preston, I took him hunting when he was about 9 or 10 with a single shot, 410 shotgun that my dad started me with. And so he is very, very safe. I mean, he has had it drilled into him, so I trust him.
Okay. 297-5633. We'll take some phone calls as we move along for Treasurer John Kennedy, who has been on this show many times in the past. And since we last visited, you got kind of a spanking from the editorial page of the Baton Rouge Advocate. Were you surprised at their, I guess for lack of a better term, they accused you of grandstanding on these NGOs?
Well, I've tried not to get into the personalities. I've tried to stay focused on the issues, and to me the issue is one of priorities. Since we began the NGO funding in the 1970s, we spent probably $500 million at least in the operating budget and the building budget. We have some good NGOs. There's some good, some aren't. Council on Aging, for example, is one of the really good ones in my opinion. But the real issue for the NGOs is whether they are as important or more important than our priorities. And the way I look at it, given the way things are in terms of financing, if you fund the Purple Circle Social Club, for example, one of the NGOs that I've referred to the Office of Debt Recovery, or Serenity 67, if you fund them over LSU or Southern, or the Baton Rouge Community College, you don't have your priorities straight. And that's the way I've approached it. I've also approached it trying to do the job that actually Governor Blanco gave me. She put me in charge of making sure that all the NGOs who receive money send in quarterly accountings about how they spent it with receipts and canceled checks.
All right, hold tight. We'll be back with Treasurer John Kennedy in 90 seconds on WRKF. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633 or 877-217-5757. We're talking with State Treasurer John Kennedy, who has blocked $19,000 to a non-compliant NGO, the non-governmental organization with ties to Baton Rouge lawmaker Yvonne Dorsey Colomb. Now, is this some kind of a witch hunt against her?
Well, as I say, I've really tried to stay away from the personalities. We have had 36 NGOs that have refused to submit any accountings whatsoever. They were way past the deadline. I sent them a letter and said, look, I'm going to give you all one more chance to please comply with the law. If you don't, I'm going to refer you to the Office of Debt Recovery and the Attorney General. 19 of them did not comply. We still have one outstanding that we're reviewing. Some did comply and submit the documentation. And that's kind of where we are. The 19 of them have gone to the Office of Debt Recovery and the Attorney General. They'll be looked at for noncompliance with, they clearly haven't complied with state law in terms of submitting the documentation about how they spent the money. They'll also be looked at in terms of whether they owe state and federal income tax because they either didn't have or lost their nonprofit status.
Well, the lawmaker I spoke of, Yvonne Dorsey Colomb, says her groups are being unfairly targeted. Your response?
That's not accurate, and I really don't want to get off into the personalities. As I said, Jim, I've tried to follow the law. I think I have. I've been critical of organizations like the Purple Circle Social Club. I think it's Serenity 67. I mean, Serenity 67 is one I sent to the Attorney General and the Office of Debt Recovery. How they ever got money, I don't know. They owe $112,000 in a federal tax lien. They owe a state tax lien of almost $17,000. They owe money to the city of Baton Rouge. I've also been critical of the legislature's appropriation of money to the Junior League in New Orleans. I just don't consider those. And the Junior League is a fine organization, but I don't think it's as important right now as trying to keep faculty members at LSU from going to the University of Texas or the University of Alabama because they're offering them more money.
Well, the Advocate editorial that I referenced, which was probably written either by Danny Heitman or Lanny Keller, finishes, "The main return we're likely to see in the future is publicity for Kennedy rather than recovery of the state's money." That column was met with fire from people like C.B. Forgotston, and I'm sure you were a bit perplexed. What do you think?
I've just tried to stay away from all the personalities and just do my job. I think you will see legislation this spring to change the process for funding NGOs. To me, the answer is, or at least an answer, is to say, look, if you want to fund an NGO, you can't just bury it in the budget, 1,000-page budget, and not put your name on it. If you want to fund the Purple Circle Social Club, you have to put your name on the bill as a legislator. It has to be an individual bill. It has to be voted on separately by the state legislature in public session. It has to pass by two-thirds vote. If it does pass, you have to do a quarterly accounting of how you spent the money with receipts, and you're subject to audit by the legislative auditor. Now, if you do that, the good NGOs, like the Council on Aging, will be funded. I predict you that the NGOs like Serenity 67 and the Purple Circle Social Club and some others won't be funded because nobody's going to want to put their name on that. Will it completely solve the problem? I think it'll solve about 99% of the problem.
Okay. 297-5633, Engster Show at WRKF.org if you'd like to reach us online. Question from a listener, Jeff. He wants to know your thoughts about a column recently written by Bob Mann in NOLA.com, and I'm just pulling it up. Jeff notes that Mann wrote that almost every gubernatorial appointee, 96, gave to Governor Jindal's campaign. Is this something that is a great revelation, or is this business as usual?
Well, I read Bob's articles. I don't know if I saw that one, but Bob's very good. His books are even better. I think it's happened in every gubernatorial administration probably since the beginning of time, and it probably happens in other states as well. Doesn't make it right. I think it's, if I remember the article correctly, he pointed out that it's happened more often with the current administration. I don't have any way of knowing, I haven't researched it. If Bob said it, I'm sure he researched it. But I don't think it's anything unusual in politics. You can argue it's not a good thing, but that gets you off into the discussion of how do you fund campaigns.
Well, the day that the governor took office, January 14th, 2008, his main theme was improvement of the ethics standards in Louisiana, saying we were going to have the gold standard. Some would say this is far from the gold standard.
Well, you can debate whether we have the gold standard of ethics laws, but no, I don't think any reasonable person can deny that our standard of enforcement is more like lead, or maybe tin. You can have the best set of laws in the world, but if you don't enforce them, and we clearly don't enforce ours. If you look at the number and quantity of ethics fines that are owed, it's pretty extraordinary. We had a meeting last week with Tim Barfield, who's the new head of the Office of Debt Recovery, myself, Tim, the legislative auditor, the AG, and the Commissioner of Administration. And Tim has agreed to, if the Ethics Commission wants to help, to go collect those fines for the Ethics Commission. And I think he'll be very aggressive in doing that. And I think you'll see a lot of people pay those fines. Many of the people who owe the fines are fairly well known. Some of them are public officials. It's not like they've skipped town and gone to California and we can't find them. They're here, they owe the money, and I think you'll see a lot of them pay up.
Before we dispense with the NGO discussion, you and your latest column singled out a group, I think it's called Rise Up Louisiana.
Correct.
What's wrong with this group?
What I was talking about, Rise Up Louisiana, was the process. Rise Up Louisiana went to the legislature. It was either in 08 or 09, and they got an appropriation. The Governor Jindal vetoed it. But then Rise Up Louisiana walked right across the street and got a consulting contract from one of Governor Jindal's cabinet secretaries. And that happened in 24 or 25 instances in 08-09. And the point I was trying to make was that the process for funding the NGOs is sometimes very hard to follow, and it's not completely transparent. If you didn't know how to look for it, you would think that the Rise Up Louisiana didn't get any money that year, but in fact they did.
What do you think the solution is?
Transparency. Make the legislature, or ask the legislature, require the legislature to vote on these separately. Nobody is going to, no legislator is going to stand up and put his name on a bill for the Purple Circle Social Club or Serenity 67 or the Hop To It Music Company or the Smiles and Happiness Foundation. They'll only do it if they can bury them in the budget and no one has to be the author. If they have to vote on them individually with a two-thirds vote and put their name on it, they won't do it. Nobody's going to vote for those things over LSU or Rhodes or Southern or the Community College or Coastal Restoration.
Well, some would say, you know, we got a budget that's well over $20 billion. Why fret over a couple of million dollars?
Well, all you have to do is go ask the faculty at LSU or Delgado or Southern. All you have to do is go through Lockett Hall out at LSU gym and see the plywood on the floor covering up the holes. Our universities have been cut from $1.6 billion to $600 million. That's 64%. So if we've got plenty of money, we sure aren't spending it at the universities. And I think that's I just can't see funding an NGO like this over universities or roads or small business development. That's just my opinion. That's how I feel as a taxpayer. But I think a lot of Louisianians, maybe not some people, but some of the insiders don't. But I think most Louisianians would agree with me.
297-5633 for the state treasurer, John Neely Kennedy. State Senate President John Alario is stating that he hopes the gubernatorial election of 2015 will include a debate about a new state constitution. He says there needs to be more flexibility in the tax code. What do you think of this?
We've had 11 constitutions. I guess one more wouldn't hurt. The 73 Constitution wasn't perfect, but it's a good document. It's been amended a lot. If you pick a good group of people who are apolitical, who are bipartisan, to draft a model constitution, that's a good idea. But you got to be careful. You can end up with something worse than what you have. To me, the Constitution's not our problem. We do have 13 constitutional dedications of money, but we've got 416 statutory dedications that were passed with a majority vote and can be unpassed with a majority vote. That ties up $3.8 billion. We've got 468 statutory exclusions to our tax code that say somebody doesn't have to pay sales, income, or excise taxes like you and I do. That ties up $4.8 billion. So if you add them up, we've got over $8 billion in a $25.3 billion budget that is dedicated by a majority vote of the legislature. It can be undedicated by a majority vote of the legislature. I do not think the problem is our Constitution. Can the Constitution be improved? Sure. But I don't think we have to wait for a constitutional convention if we have the political will.
Here's a question from Bill at the state capitol for Treasurer Kennedy. He writes, Louisiana just elected a high school dropout to be its representative in the 5th Congressional District. Why do we need to support the TOPS program?
In my opinion, the TOPS program has done more to keep kids in Louisiana than anything I've ever seen government do. We still have a problem of our smart kids going to Dallas and Denver to get jobs. TOPS has kept a lot of them here, kids that otherwise would have gone to University of Texas or Ole Miss or Alabama. It's not a perfect program, but I really think the political establishment ought to leave it alone, because once they start changing it, I think they're more likely than not will screw it up. I'd like to leave it just like it is. Mm-hmm.
But the bill has a good point. This guy, Vance McAllister, is a high school dropout. He's now a U.S. House member from the great state of Louisiana. I wonder how many high school dropouts there are in the House of Representatives.
I don't know. I know the richest man in the world, the richest person in the world, was a college dropout. So I don't know. Education.
But there's a difference between being a college dropout and a high school dropout.
True. There are a lot of smart people who didn't finish school, but I think that's the... In terms of success in the world today, I think that's the exception rather than the rule.
Another listener, Sharon, notes that Timmy Teeple, the governor's chief strategist, was homeschooled and did not go to college. So you can make it without TOPS, can't you?
Certainly you can. But what often happens is, Jim, for our bright, really bright kids, many of them have stayed in Louisiana because of the TOPS program. Otherwise, they'd take that offer to the University of Texas or University of Alabama or University of Florida or Millsaps College, and this has helped keep them here. And I really think it's worked well. I think it makes our kids take harder courses in college, even if they don't get a TOPS program, and I wouldn't change it a bit.
Well, what does it say about our state? And Bill has inspired me with his question. The guy you used to work for, Buddy Romer, like him or not, I think he often was ridiculed unfairly because he had 2 degrees from Harvard.
Right.
And here we just elected a guy to represent the 5th Congressional District who didn't finish high school. Does that say anything about our state?
Well, I'm not to me. I mean, it was every campaign is unique. I don't think you in America today, I don't think you have to have a high school diploma or a college diploma to be a success. We can both think of a lot of instances where successful people left school or were homeschooled. I do think if you look at probabilities and statistics in a global economy based on knowledge, where our competition is not Texas or Mississippi, but, you know, it's Singapore and Turkmenistan, that you have to have some sort of advanced degree, whether it's in addition to a high school degree, a vo-tech degree, or an associate degree from a community college, or college degree from four-year school. I think you're better off. Even if you don't use it, you just see the world in a different way when you have more knowledge. But it doesn't absolutely. I mean, there are plenty of instances where people haven't had to have that to be successful. But I sure wouldn't stop telling people, our kids, to go to school.
Well, my guess is that the people who are around you, the deputy treasurers, or your closest advisors in your office, that I would imagine most likely all of them have college degrees, and surely none of them dropped out of high school.
Not that I know of. I'm not sure about Jason, but I probably better double check on his. I probably better double check on his transcript. But
talking
how
about
yours, Jim? I want to see
well,
yours. No.
Well, Jason I and I both did. Went to LSU, so
I know. I'm only kidding, Jason.
Well, as did your brother George.
That's right.
But you went to Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Why did you saunter off to Nashville rather than going to school in your own backyard?
It was a football program.
Advantage.
I wanted to see that SEC football.
You could have seen some pretty good SEC football if you'd stayed at LSU. But
I hear you.
But
I did go to LSU. I teach at LSU Law School, and I did go to LSU one summer in summer school. I took a couple courses out there and really enjoyed it.
Okay.
And I teach in the spring at the law school and like being out on the campus. It's beautiful. But there's a lot of work that needs to be done repairing the buildings. A lot of work, and frankly, I hate to say this, but if we keep losing faculty members, we're not going to need all those buildings.
Well, the latest Bernie Pinsonet poll puts you in a mock race for governor, whether you asked to be there or not, and
mm-hmm.
you're second behind David Vitter.
Right.
What did you make of this?
I saw the articles. I haven't studied the poll. I don't know what to make of it. You know, the election's 2 years from now. You've been doing this government stuff, Jim, as long as I have. It can change in a heartbeat. So I really haven't sat down and looked at the poll. I will probably over the holidays. I think Bernie's put it on the Internet, so I'll print it out and look at it.
Well, the poll includes John Bel Edwards, David Vitter, who's first, John Kennedy, who's second, and Jay Darden, who's third. And by the way, John Bel Edwards is scheduled to be with us tomorrow. But
he's a very smart guy.
He is graduate of West Point.
That's right.
David Vitter, graduate.
I want you to ask him why he went to West Point.
Well, I will, and I'll ask David Vitter why he went to Harvard.
Okay.
Jay Darden went to LSU, though. In fact, he was student body president. The guy who managed his campaign was George Kennedy, brother of John. And we'll return with John Kennedy after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 877-217-5757, your number. Inkster Show at WRKF.org online. And we're continuing our discussion with the State Treasurer, John Neely Kennedy. So if you're obviously popular enough to be second in a mock poll for governor, is there any thought about getting in that race in 2015?
Well, I was asked that question at Press Club a few months ago. I told the press the truth. I'm thinking about it very seriously, but I haven't made a decision.
Haven't made a decision. Might run for attorney general, too. Might run for a lot of things, but and you might run for reelection. When will you make your decision?
You know, I don't know, Jim. I'll make it in time. I never know how to answer that. This is my personal feeling. I don't want to see any of these campaigns start too early because I think we're much better at our politics than we are at our policy. We have a lot of issues right now that I I think all of us need to work together to solve the university's problem, the roads. I mean, try driving into Baton Rouge from Lafayette between 2 o'clock and 6 o'clock in the afternoon now. Flood insurance is a huge problem. Funding coastal restoration. Just because we have a coastal restoration plan doesn't mean we have the money. And I know we'll get some money from BP eventually, but it won't be enough. Schools, I've never seen our teachers more demoralized than they are now. To me, what we ought to be doing in education, teaching quality is not the only factor, but it's a big factor in a child's learning. We need to find out which of our teachers can teach and pay them, like the professionals they are. We need to find out which of our teachers can teach and fire them. But we also need to do both of those without demonizing the entire teaching profession. And they have been demonized. And I think that was a mistake, and it's caused a lot of problems. So we've got a lot of issues dealing with policy that we need to get right over the next 2 years. There will be plenty of time for a campaign, but in my opinion, now is not the time. And I know some disagree with that, but that's where I'm sitting.
Well, it's an open primary, and looks like there'll be more than a few Republicans running. You have to think of the political process as well. Certainly, if you got three or four Republicans running, only one's going to win. And of course, if only one Democrat's in, it would seem that John Bel Edwards might have a good shot of making a runoff against one of the Republicans. So then it becomes the last GOP candidate standing. Is that a consideration when you look at a race like this?
Jim, honestly, I haven't really thought that much about it. I really haven't. I think 2 years is way too early. I am thinking seriously about running for governor, but I haven't made a decision. I'm thinking very seriously about it. I don't want to be coy, but I haven't made a decision. I mean, I you know what I'm more interested in right now? We're spending $7 billion a year on our Medicaid program. 3% of our Medicaid patients account for 43% of the spending. We're spending over $3 billion on only 3% of our patients out of a $7 billion program.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to go find out who those 3% of the patients are. And
right.
And we could probably hire each of them a personal assistant and say a personal a physician and save money. That's the kind of thing I'm interested in right now. There'll be plenty of time. Believe me, this is Louisiana for the politics.
Jason in New Orleans, I'm going to forward some questions from listeners. Jason in New Orleans asks, if you think the money for the new medical complex in New Orleans is money well spent by the government.
Too early to tell. I want to see whether the project comes in over budget. They budgeted between $1 billion and $1.2 billion for the new facility. You know, projects that large done by government usually come in higher. We need to put together the money to operate it, and also we need to put together the money to recruit top minds. If we're going to be a world-class medical center, you're not going to do that by just building a building any more than the Saints can be national champions by building them a new stadium. I do know this in terms of privatization. I supported the privatization. I still support it. But we were told it was going to cost us about $626 million a year. It's costing us about $1.1 billion a year. That's more than the state was spending when we were running the hospitals ourselves. We were only spending $955 million. The numbers are the numbers. So far, the privatization has not saved money. It's cost us more. And that's all in. That's with the retirement costs and everything else.
Okay. Ed Richards, Professor Richards at the School of Law, he writes, how much of the cost will fall on the LSU system of the new charity hospital in New Orleans?
If you look at if you look at the business plan for the new hospital in New Orleans, it makes two critical assumptions. It assumes that if the new hospital captures 50% of the new Medicaid patients under the Affordable Care Act, the state will only have to subsidize the new hospital by about $100 million a year. Now, obviously, we're not part of the Affordable Care Act, the Medicaid portion, which I have supported, by the way. I support the governor on that. But that tells me that we'll probably have to subsidize the hospital between $100 and $200 million a year out of the general fund. That will come out of LSU, a good portion of it.
Okay. Two questions, or actually it's the same question from both Steve Winham and Steve Miley. Steve Winham, who you know well, says, Jim, did you decide not to ask John about the Foster Shrine this time? I asked you right at the end last time, and so I want to give you a chance to expound upon your thoughts about whether $2 million for a Foster Museum or library, whatever it is, in Franklin's a good use of taxpayer money.
Well, first, Winham, come back, okay? I mean, I wish Steve was just an awesome budget director. He retired. I know he's enjoying retirement. I wish he'd come back to work for the state, frankly. Number two, you know, I'm biased because I work for Governor Foster. I also work for Governor Romer, so I'm not the right one to ask. I do think that, and I'm very fond of both of Mike and Buddy. I do think you ought. I don't begrudge Governor Foster. Whatever you want to call it. I'm not sure he was the one who suggested it. I think his senators did. But I also think that all governors ought to be treated the same. I think former governors, what you do for one, you need to do for all of them. So you just got to be fair in that respect, in my opinion.
Wouldn't it be better for these governors to go out and raise the money on their own, though, than have the taxpayers foot the bill?
Well, that's what presidents do. As you know, that's what presidents do. That would be one option. I just like to see them all treated the same. And again, I'm not begrudging Governor Foster the proposal. I mean, his position is he didn't initiate it; his state senators did, and I believe him. But regardless, I think you ought to treat all the former governors the same.
But we've got a lot of former governors. If we spend $2 million here and $2 million there. Oh, pretty soon we're up to $100 million.
Well, maybe we could give them the money from the Purple Circle Social Club and some of those.
Well, but that wouldn't be enough. That wouldn't be enough.
Well, if you look at all the NGOs, Jim, it would. If you look at
if you got
NGOs,
rid of all of them, yeah.
Yeah, if you looked at all of them, a lot of these NGOs are funded through. For example, you saw the article about New Light City, Reverend Lucas's NGO in New Orleans. The legislative auditor said the administration gave him $900,000 after the storm. They can only account for like $500,000. I went and checked, and Reverend Lucas, former legislator, in addition to getting that money, has about 20 different consulting contracts with the Department of Education.
Okay. Well, it seems to be the same kind of thing, though. You're on the one hand, you're going after people who you believe are misusing public dollars, taxpayer money, and here we have a case in which Governor Foster certainly has the means himself to build his own library. Why does he need $2 million from the state's taxpayers to do so?
Well, I'm not here to defend Mike. I just would make the point again that I think what you do for one former governor, you have to do for all of them. That just seems to be the fairest approach to me.
Okay. Here's a story that was in the Advocate yesterday. The chairman of the Senate Finance Committee vented last week about what he viewed as a communication failure on the part of the Jindal administration. At issue were changes involving $134 million in state construction projects. Instead of being funded this year, millions of dollars for a civil rights museum, streets in Algiers, LSU, and other projects are being delayed because of the state's financial constraints. The Jindal administration presented the list to the Interim Emergency Board last week and asked for approval of the delay. What's going on here?
It's not the financial constraints. It's the fact that the legislature has given their authority to decide what gets built to the governor. And the governor, and that's not just Governor Jindal. That's been Governor Blanco, Governor Foster, Governor Edwards, Governor Romer. They just abdicated their authority, and the governors, whoever the governor is, decides what gets built behind closed doors and then tells the legislature. So if a legislator is unhappy, all they have to do is follow the Constitution and change and take back their power. happen to agree with Jack. If you look at the stuff that the administration is funding, you know, I don't consider the Grand Opera House of the South or a fence around the Kingwood subdivision in New Orleans or funding community centers or bike paths. I don't consider those to be priorities. They're priorities for somebody in the administration, but they're not priorities for the taxpayers in Louisiana. But those are actual things that have been funded. The general administration actually gave $140,000 to a private subdivision in New Orleans East to build a fence around it. I don't consider that a priority.
Another question from a listener, John Kennedy, references your run for the U.S. Senate in 2008 and saying that you would have had a better chance had you waited until 2014. How are the dynamics different for the challenger to Senator Landrieu next year as opposed to when you ran 5 years ago?
I don't think we know yet. I mean, every election is different, and I don't think we know yet what the atmosphere will be like a year from now in terms of the national political scene. Senate elections track national issues more than state issues. Not that's a bit of a broad brush statement, but I think it's generally true. So we'll see. I mean, I just don't think we know yet.
Well, Governor Jindal has stated he won't get in that race, and he has indicated that he is now considering running for president of the United States in 2016. His approval rating in this Pensionat poll is 42%. Does that surprise you? It's up 4%, but it's still, I'm looking at some governors around the country right now, and Mike Huckabee, Arkansas, 66% approval rating, and he's a Democrat.
Yep.
Why has the governor faltered with the people of this state if Bernie's numbers are right?
You know, I think there are a variety of reasons for it. I'm sure if you ask the governor his argument, and it would be a legitimate one, was, well, I made some tough calls, and when you make tough calls, you make some people mad. And I think there would be some wisdom in that. I think the fact that the governor's been gone a lot, he was chairman of the Republican Governors Association, and some said that he's running for president, and that takes a lot of time out of state. I think that the governor also has a unique way of dealing with the media. I enjoy the interaction with the media. I like coming on your show, Jim. I do. I mean, I think you ask very good questions, very interesting, and I like to hear, you know, your callers' questions. Sometimes they're really tough, and that's good. I don't think Governor Jindal enjoys that or likes that as much. And you add all those things up. But you have to be completely objective and to be fair. You know, when you're governor for 7 years in Louisiana, sooner or later you're going to wear out your welcome. It happens to the best of them.
Well, there have been other governors, Mike Foster. He is. I don't think he ever got down to 42% or 38%.
No, that's true. You make a valid point.
And he was a guy who, you know, some people didn't like that he went to law school, didn't like that he didn't go out of state. But nonetheless, he apparently had some appeal with the electorate that Bobby Jindal does not.
He did. I remember Governor Foster did a weekly radio program during which he took calls. I always thought that was a very smart thing to do and a very good thing to do for taxpayers who could call in and ask him questions.
Live mic. I remember the show.
Yeah, he would do his duck calls on there. Remember that? That was pretty cool.
Well, he was a character. And in Louisiana, we tend to reward characters, don't we?
We do. You know, there's no reason this stuff has to be dull. But it's very serious, too. It's also very serious. We've got there are only one or two problems that Louisiana has that we couldn't solve ourselves. I'd throw up my hands and say I don't know what to do about it. But most of the others have a solution. You're going to make some people mad solving the problem, but you can still solve it if you want to.
Here's a question that comes in right as we're about to close, so I'll be brief, and of course Treasurer Kennedy will have to be brief, but have we given away the store to Tom Benson in New Orleans?
I support the Saints. I know it's a lot of money, but I think we get back. I think it's a lot like the movie Tax Credit. We get back more than we put in. I know others disagree with that, but that's what the numbers show me.
Now we're supporting his basketball team and his office complex.
But they got a monopoly, Jim. If you want an NFL team or an NBA team, they've given them a monopoly, and you either meet their terms or they go somewhere else. That's just the way it is.
And I'll say this, when he bought the team, there weren't a lot of people in line trying to get it.
That's right.
He stood tall when things were uncertain, but they're going very well for Mr. Benson right now. Treasurer Kennedy, always a pleasure. Have a great Thanksgiving, and hope we talk soon.
Thanks, Jimmy. Take care, man.
Take care. We'll be back soon, as in tomorrow, for J.C. Kane. I'm Jim Engster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.